All right, thanks very much, everybody, for attending. Just a couple of quick intros, if I may, to start with. There we go. Just to introduce ourselves, Rick Mack. Rick, at one stage, was one of the only Citrix technical professionals in the APJ region, until apparently recently, where there has been another one appointed. But between the pair of us, I think we've got something like is about 30 years worth of experience on RDSH, terminal services. So about that sort of area. We will cover off a wide variety of areas as far as... Oops, sorry. I just figured I'd better bring up, just jumping ahead, just bringing up the agenda. We're going to cover off the choices you've got if you're going to head down thin clients, whether or not you're going to go VDI or RDSH or terminal services. So this is a very sort of broad, general, if you like, session. If you are interested in more deep technical dive on RDSH and the Win8 VDI, then we will be having a session digging into that a little bit deeper after lunch. So, I guess Rick and I are both from Quest Software. We both cover off an area called user workspace management, where we dive deep into the technical side, I guess, from the VDI and terminal services. Both of us have a lot of experience, both in the Citrix as the various other VDI elements, I guess, and so we'll cover off from there. So we're going to cover off, as far as the agenda goes, we're going to cover off areas around the best practices between the two. Which one should you choose? As far as whether or not which one is the most cost-effective approach. It used to be referred to as persistent and non-persistent VDI. It's now going to be referred to as pooled and personal from a Server 2012 perspective. So there is a slight name changing on that side of things. We'll also cover off some good common sense practices around bandwidth and protocols. As far as printers and printer drivers and printing in this sort of remote architecture, I think it's fair to say that Rick's probably forgotten more than I've ever learnt about this sort of subject. So if you do have any sort of issues around that, we have only one slide on it. We will keep it sort of fairly general. But I would encourage everyone that if you've got any specific questions or specific areas that you'd like to get into as far as your particular scenarios, please feel free to grab us after the session. We both got business cards, etc. We can love to have a chat to you in a bit more depth. We've also got the afternoon session as well, and we'll be here between lunch. Okay, does that pretty much cover it off, Rick?
Yeah.
Okay. So, did you want to sort of take the first?
Yeah. I guess the first thing to cover, let's ask some questions. How many people here are actively using terminal services or session host? Most of you. How about VDI, single-user terminal services? Okay, not very many.
Tell us a story.
I guess, historically, there's a lot of things we can talk about, but virtual desktops have been around for a long time, really, since Citrix kicked the whole thing off on Windows back in 1995. And if you want to turn things back a little bit further, X11 Unix, X11 workstations, etc. The concept isn't new. Really, what we're here for is to talk about some of the gotchas with the various technologies, what you've got to watch out for. And specifically, I guess the message we want to leave you with is VDI has a place in virtual desktops. It's a lot easier because you're dealing with single-user terminal services. I should say single-user session host instead of multi-user session host from an application basis, from a user privilege basis and everything else. And really what we want to do is give you a little bit of introduction to the things that we think are important. I guess the first one is virtualization overall, virtualizing session hosts, virtualizing VDI. 2-3 years ago,
sorry, just take your hand away from the mic.
Yeah, it's okay. It's right. 2-3 years ago, there was a lot of argument about whether you should use physical or virtual hosts for session host. I think that's no longer the case. We're really talking about hypervisors and scalability, and specifically which technology is more scalable. The first and really important message to leave you with is virtual desktops and virtual desktop virtualization and server virtualization should be kept separate. I think David's actually going to cover this in a later slide, but the worst people to do virtual desktop, to do virtual desktop virtualization, that is, sticking virtual desktops on a hypervisor platform, are your server virtualization people. And I don't want to offend anyone there, but the skill sets, the mindset, and everything else that's required for desktop virtualization is really very different from the skill set and mindset that's needed for server virtualization. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about general strategies in terms of hardware. There are monster servers available now where you can get quad processor, terabyte of RAM, wickedly fast hard disk, and that sort of thing. And there's a great temptation to scale that up as far as you need to. If you think about it, if you've got a quarter of a terabyte, half a terabyte of RAM, you can literally host hundreds and hundreds of virtual desktop sessions. If for some reason that server fails, you've got to do maintenance on that server, that sort of thing, the impact on your virtual desktop environment is huge. So really, smaller pizza boxes, smaller incremental servers, perhaps don't make as much sense in terms of scalability, but they make a heck of a lot more sense in terms of redundancy and basically giving your users a consistent environment. If everybody's on one server and that server has a problem, you've got a huge problem. If you've got your user numbers spread over a large number of servers, then you've really incrementally reduced your problems quite significantly.
So I guess just to put that in perspective, does everyone use overcommit with server virtualization? I'm assuming that's the case, okay? Is everyone aware of the dangers of using overcommit in a VDI implementation? Because that's the real sort of key difference between the two, okay? If you start using overcommit, because I don't think there's anyone from a hypervisor perspective advising you to use that, but then that detracts from the user interface, okay? From the user experience, I should say. Okay.
We should probably qualify that a little bit in terms of overcommit. Obviously, we're talking VMware terminology. It was impossible to overcommit on earlier versions of Hyper-V because you didn't have dynamic memory. But now you do. Dynamic memory allocation is a really, really dangerous thing because if your total memory allocation is greater than the actual physical memory you've got available, you can hit the wall in some really interesting ways. And that's really what David's talking about in terms of memory overcommit.
Okay. So one of the other points of concern is, from a VDI perspective, IOPS. This is something that, and we are using broad generalization terms, broad generalization, you don't have to worry about it too much for most of the loads in a server virtualization. With a desktop perspective, yes, you do. Okay. With the IOPS that are generally speaking, talking about as far as calculations, you can use a low value of somewhere between 5 and 10 IOPS per OS, okay, from a desktop OS. It rises to sort of 12 to 15 at the midpoint and then starts to see 20 to 30 IOPS per OS at the heavy end. But these are generalized values based on both Citrix and VMware, Microsoft and our own research as well, okay. Even things like the Liquidware Labs, et cetera, for the VDI assessment tool that we actually help you get for free if that's what you want to do, okay? These values are generalizations only, okay? They are a good rule of thumb to take out to start with, so you get some broad calculations, but they're not necessarily going to be accurate further down the track. The larger the implementation, if you run 500,000, et cetera, the numbers will come back because the averages will start to work for you. In small, isolated pockets, 10, 20, 30, you're going to find you're going to have huge variations in this, okay? So do be aware, this is potentially a danger point as well, okay? The main thing to allow for is IOPS. There are ways of mitigating this, and certainly some of the elements we've done with vWorkspace in Hyper-V, you can actually do VDI without any need for IOPS and a SAN for your VDI image, okay? We can restrict it down to the point where it's only user data only, okay? So it's a huge advantage in that element, okay? But what we are trying to point out, and that's why we sort of use the graphic here, is IOPS can be a killer from a VDI perspective if it's not run correctly. were actually at a Dell conference last week where one of the chaps mentioned that a 500-seat VDI implementation was pretty much brought to its knees because they used traditional thinking in the way they looked at the IOPS and the storage capabilities at the back end. Okay? Which again comes back to reinforce what Rick was saying about we're not having a go at anyone who's done server virtualization, but if you take that same mindset and look at desktop virtualization with that, you can sometimes find that there's a couple of alligators ready to grab you and start tearing your project apart, okay? Just trying to help as far as be warned.
Actually, just extending the IOPS story a little bit, obviously what we're talking about is input-output operations per second. Disk I.O. and Network I.O. represent some significant bottlenecks that you're going to have to deal with in the virtual desktop environment. Anything you can do to minimize that, to cache the I.O., and what we're talking about on the network side is stuff like folder redirection, the overhead that does that, simple logons, pulling in the user profile on logon. In the case of VDI, obviously, we've got many instances of operating systems, so you've got these new terms that have come up in the industry, like bootstorms. When you're starting up 3,000 virtual machines and they're sitting on a back-end SAN infrastructure, that's pretty heavy I.O. Unless your design deals with that, you're going to hit some major bottlenecks in terms of performance and in terms of your ability to deliver an acceptable user experience.
Okay. So I guess the other element is, at its very simplest, when you first start with RDSH and remote desktop session host, a single server is very simple, very easy. As soon as you add a second one, you can't necessarily guarantee. The whole point of this exercise is to have some element of load balancing so that you've got some sort of availability within the system. As soon as you do that, you can't guarantee which one the user is going to land on, so therefore you need to have roaming profiles. Going back to the days when I first did my WinFrame training from the Citrix side, it's actually drilled into you that you must have roaming profiles. Okay? If you don't have roaming profiles, forget about it. It's not going to work. Okay? So with that starts to come some dangers. I would suggest, I'd even challenge everybody here in this room, have a look at your profile on your laptop. I'm assuming most of you are all laptop users, right? So have a look at your laptop and then just go to see users, your name, and then just do a quick check on the properties. I would challenge anyone has less than 4 gig in that profile. Okay? It's a huge value. I think from both Rick and my experience, certainly developers seem to think that that's a bucket to chuck everything in. If anyone's installed Google Maps or anything like that, I mean, look, you just watch the cache fill up with all of that sort of junk. And the real key is being selective about what gets redirected, what gets saved, okay, so that it's available for the next session, okay, when the users come in. Be aware that there is some details, there's some new details around Server 2012, which is quite handy, but at the same point, please use folder redirection, please use roaming profiles, but do be selective in that folder redirection. Don't just go and grab app data and add that into the folder redirection, because that's where things will definitely come unstuck. Okay? Be nice and light.
You'll actually come unstuck for a couple of reasons, redirecting app data. The first one is pretty obvious. There are applications that use the app data folder as a work directory. So if you redirect app data, if you're using Autodesk products, for example, what you're going to end up is generating a hell of a lot of network I.O., and that can cripple you in some scenarios. The other one, which is rather more interesting, is with the increasing advent of the usage of Windows 7 and UAC, etc., what we're starting to see is user mode viruses and trojans that actually install their binary code into app data and install their startup stuff into HKey user. So you've literally got a scenario where you have to think about the impact both from a security viewpoint and from a network performance viewpoint of redirecting app data. And this is really where stuff like, at least from a performance viewpoint, user profile disks, which are new with Server 2012, allow you to, in the VDI scenario and in the session host scenario, basically bulk all the users, if you like, a super roaming profile, except because it's a VHD, what you've got is you've got a lot of efficiencies from the viewpoint that you're doing block mode I/O to the VHD. One of the biggest problems right now, particularly with Server 2012, is you've got so many options for managing user profiles. And
did you want to save that for the session later?
Pardon?
Server 2012, did you want to save that for this afternoon session?
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
That's all right.
Okay, go on.
So I guess just looking at some other basics around the, or some fundamentals, regardless of whether you're looking at a VDI design or an RDSH design, try and keep all the images in alignment. Okay, this is something that can be very hard and it can be time consuming, but it will pay off in the long run. Okay, as soon as, in fact, even at one of the universities here locally, they started looking at RDSH and then they found it was too difficult to actually keep everything in alignment. Okay, so what I mean by that is, like, if once I've got three servers and I'm load balancing them, administrators tend to do things and they tend to fix things because that's what we are. I mean, sorry, from a purely engineering point of view, we're tinkerers. We like to fix it and we want to say, yes, I can fix it. And they get in and they fix it. Oh, hang on. They've only fixed one server, not the other two. Ah, don't worry about that. I'll get around to it later. Whoops. And now you've got a disparity, okay? And I am saying it's wrong, actually. Sorry. The point is, we're human. And we go, fix it. Oh, yes, I'll get the milk on the way home, sweet. We get distracted. We're up on stage here right now. We're both going to get distracted with various bits and pieces we go through. The point is, be forceful and diligent and disciplined about making sure they stay in alignment. I have been distracted. I'll get back to the story. The point is, they started with RDSH, found it too hard, so they then went to VDI, because now they go, great, I can just take a master template, reprovision. Bang. Sorted. Well, that's pretty cool. And then when we actually came back to them and said, we've actually improved the workspace and now what we can do is do exactly what we do for desktop virtualization. You can do the same thing with RDSH and you can provision off a master template. It's not necessary to save storage because we're already doing that, because RDSH, Remote Desktop Session Host, does the density for you in the first place. But by using the same mechanism, it's easier. I can now go and tweak that one master template offline, set it to reprovision on Friday afternoon or over the weekend, and now what I'm doing is I'm still fixing just that one terminal server, but now it goes across the entire farm. Okay? Again, we're just trying to leverage what computers do really, really well. They do dumb things, but they do it consistently. Okay? But you have to tell it how to do that. Okay? So if we can take it so you can just do it on a single master, it makes it a little bit easier.
Okay. So one of the messages we want to give you out of that is, if you're not virtualizing your session host right now, you should. Technically you've only got one session host, you've got a very small environment, think about virtualizing them and having two so you've got a degree of redundancy. And the nice thing about virtualizing them is now you can suddenly standardize your images, make sure that everybody gets a consistent environment when they log on, and make your management task a hell of a lot easier. While you're dealing with physical session hosts, you've always got problems of keeping them in sync. You've either got to spend a lot of time with proper processes, scripting everything. Anything that you're doing manually is probably stupid. When you really think about
it, take it easy, Rick. I'm sure these people are not stupid. Okay. I do have to occasionally pull Rick up on that one.
Sorry. We better talk to the slide.
Well, I guess one caveat is what Rick was saying about virtualization and physical. We had an interesting customer, and if our sales guys were here, I'd get shot in the foot, shot in the ass probably, but anyway. Anyway, because I'm too sharing. Okay, we had a customer out in Tamworth and they said, love your stuff, I've tested it, it's fantastic, it saves me bandwidth, it saves me, great, fantastic, loved it. Tested all in isolation. We then turned up, gave them a hand, put it into production. God. 6 to 9 months later, and it's only a single RDSH server with 24 gig of RAM, 70 users. I mean, how hard can it be, right? What he'd neglected to tell us is that he'd had it as a virtual server, in a VMware environment. He then exported it to physical because it wasn't performing well. He even had VM tools still stuck in the image, and we couldn't get it out. So there was all manner of, when you start off with something and you're heading into production, do a clean build. Okay, that's one takeaway, that please take that away. This is something that we learned quite early on. If you're ever doing a production build and it doesn't look right and it doesn't feel right, trust your gut. Delete it, get rid of it, go back, start again. God's sakes, take a snapshot. I'm just getting frustrated with the time and effort I've spent in the field as well, okay? So if you're running through, take snapshot at regular intervals as you're building your master. If it doesn't look or feel right, trust your instincts. Delete it, go back, redo it. You will thank your stars you did it. Actually, you probably won't, because you won't have experienced the pain, okay? But if you've ever experienced the pain, you know what I'm talking about. So that's another, please take that away. The other key thing on this one last slide, do be aware that if you've already implemented RDSH, you've got the ability to use AppV, okay? It's not very well known, but go ahead, use that opportunity, go and grab it and run with it, okay?
If you're using Server 2008 R2, an RDS cal includes an AppV cal. It's not going to cost you any extra money. It's well worth doing. It will keep your images a lot simpler. It will keep your application environment a lot simpler. It will give you a hell of a lot more flexibility in terms of what you deliver it to whom. It's worth the effort.
Okay. So, network, bandwidth, latency. This isn't actually a pipe. It's more of a communications mast. But you get the idea. Latency and bandwidth tend to be, and not always, but they tend to be part of each other, okay? If you fill the pipe with too much information, or too much fluid for that matter, or whatever volume is sitting in it, everything else is going to struggle to get through, okay? Latency and bandwidth can be real kickers. Now, on a server point of view, generally speaking, this is not too much of an issue. If you think about email is a fantastic mechanism, because the users, and that includes us, okay, we only know we've got an email when it gets to the client. You didn't get a timestamp on it when it arrives at the server, and you don't know that it's taken 5 or 10 minutes to get to you. Well, you do actually when one of your colleagues manages to send you a 12 meg PDF, etc., over a 3G connection. But that's beside the point. Actually, sorry, that is part of the point, because it demonstrates what latency is all about. Okay? But the reality is, you need to be a lot more focused on it from a desktop virtualization perspective. If you're doing desktop virtualization, the one key element that you may or may not be aware of about your users or about your customers, okay, depending on how it plays out, whether they've asked for it or not, when they start looking at VDI, they're actually really talking about having the ability to have a tablet down at a Starbucks and being able to have not just email, but the rest of their desktop available to them right here, right now. Okay? That's what they're talking about, is that flexibility and the agility of a business to be able to just do it when and where it suits them, not a case of when they're at their desk. The reality today, as we head further into the 21st century, is work is what you do, not where you're at. That's a real key thing to take away from that. Certainly, that's what we both live by, I guess, at the moment.
You've got to investigate the communications technologies that you've got available. One of the things we found was just kind of interesting with one customer is they basically had a traditional WAN that they were paying a bucket load of money for, and they started playing around with a 4G connection from head office. And they were absolutely amazed when they actually found out that 4G had lower latency and better throughput than their traditional WAN technologies. I guess the other thing to point out is when we're talking about session host and VDI, and particularly when people are on the WAN, we're talking about interactivity. That is, latency between keystrokes, latency in terms of screen updates and that sort of thing. And the other point about latency that's a really big deal is the higher the latency, the less efficiently you can use the available bandwidth. So latency can be a real killer.
Okay, we'll come back to this a little bit on the printing side as well, because printing and latency and bandwidth, that starts to get very interesting. Look, as a key, as a throwaway as well, we often get asked, and not just ourselves, I know colleagues, ex-colleagues in Citrix and VMware will get exactly the same question. What is a reasonable bandwidth number per user? Okay. There's that, and or how much kit do I need per number of users? It's a question we get asked all the time. And unfortunately, the answer is, it depends. It's a bit of string. Okay. It's very, very hard to quantify. Okay. If you use a broad number like, say, between 120 and 200 kbs per user, that's not a bad starting point, but I would point out it's a starting point. It's a starting point only. Both with thin clients and with bandwidth numbers, do a proof of concept. Okay? Do a proof of concept before you commit to any sort of design. In fact, design and funding, it almost really needs to be more of a pilot before you start getting firm up on your numbers. Okay? Because this is something that can come back and catch you time and time again. Okay? Is that a fair call? Okay? If you're anywhere unsure about that, do check with some of your other colleagues, etc., and all the rest of it. I remember even when I got interviewed for Citrix, that was one of the questions I got asked. And, you know, it's a quick and easy way to catch people who've not been bitten by it in the first place. Yeah?
Yeah. At Bryforum, every year they've got a geek out. Bryforum is basically a fairly agnostic conference, largely devolving around desktop virtualization technologies. And at the geek out, you've always got somebody putting their hand up and basically saying, how much bandwidth do I need for? And of course, the answer is it depends. Yeah, it depends on whether you're using, is it using Notepad at one end of the scale, or they're actually looking at videos at the other end of the scale. And unless you've got a good idea of what you're actually, your users are actually going to be doing, anybody that quotes numbers at you in terms of the amount of bandwidth you use by you need per user is lying to you.
Okay, that's a big call, but to a certain extent, I agree with Rick regardless. It's not like you're calling him stupid or anything, so that works quite well. Okay. So I guess one of the other key tenets is I don't think that we've been challenged too much going and speaking to customers and partners about the density values of comparing VDI with RDSH. Okay? But certainly, one of the pieces is sometimes people forget just quite where the relevance comes from. If you look at, generally speaking, in a virtualization environment, once you've done virtualization and you've got the ability for those elements, generally speaking, CPU is fairly plentiful. Most of the hypervisor players are quite happy about 10 to 12 VMs per core. Okay, so that's quite a lot when it comes right down to it. The fact is, if you remember about the fact that you can't necessarily have overcommit for RAM for VDI sessions, you're going to run out of RAM far quicker than you're going to run out of CPU. Storage I tend to take out of the equation because in a virtualization environment, typically with the certain virtualization guys, there's stacks of sand somewhere and there's LUNs. Okay, so tend not to worry too much about that and just hope that there's enough of it. What we do need to look at, though, is the IOPS. So if we design the IOPS out of the equation, that starts to make it even simpler to run with, okay? But from a purely RAM point of view, if you do the maths, okay, you're going to get a lot more users with RDSH than with VDI. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Broadly speaking, I guess there's a couple of things to qualify. The first one is, from a hardware perspective, as David said, VDI will cost you 2 to 3 times as much. That's in terms of memory, in terms of CPU, in terms of storage overhead and that sort of thing. That's a significant cost. But there's stuff you can do on VDI. So there's stuff you can do on single-user session host, VDI, that you can't do on multi-user session host. On session host, multi-user, you can't afford to have users have local administrator rights. It'll destroy your server. It'll destroy your environment. I know sometimes it's the easy way out when you've got an application that won't run unless you've got local admin rights, but we've got application virtualization. We've got a lot of ways to deal with that scenario. And the justification for VDI is actually very simple. You look at your application. We are in the business of delivering applications. applications are at the front end of data. So really, I guess, in a very real sense, we're in the business of delivering data. But applications are our vehicle. The virtual desktop is simply a display platform for your applications. It's as simple as that. If all your applications will run on session host, that's a far more cost-effective way to do it. If you've got an application that everybody needs that won't run on session host, now you've got a big problem. And the problem is, if we're going to roll that on virtual desktops, then we have to really be fairly serious about VDI. So if it's a subset, then what makes a heck of a lot of sense is to use session host for the bulk of your applications and the bulk of your users, and use VDI for the exceptions. Developers typically need to have local administrator rights. So if you're going to have developers offshore in India or whatever, or if you've got developers that are elsewhere working from home coming into your environment, VDI is going to have to be part of that equation. As long as you're aware of the fact there's a significant cost differential between the two technologies, but VDI is easier from an application viewpoint. And there are applications like Cisco Presence a few years ago, which mapped themselves to the MAC address of the machine they were running on. So on a session host, multi-user session host, you could run one instance of Presence. If so, everybody needs to use it,
so
you've
I guess
got a problem.
I apologize in advance if this sounds confusing, okay? Because we look like we might even be arguing for one technology over the other. The reality is we're not. We're just trying to make sure that you understand the pros and cons between the two. When it really comes down to it, VDI is not going to even be able to touch RDSH from a scalability and density point of view and a cost-saving point of view. That's the real key point. But at the same token, okay, you can't necessarily use RDSH for everything. The very first iteration that I'm aware of, at least, I think was actually Prudential got away with it in the UK, and they actually used some HP kit, and they managed to install the desktops over there and had the Indian developers coming through. So as soon as you have a developer, it's not going to work in RDSH. As Rick pointed out, they need to be a local administrator. They need to have Visual Studio. They need to have a whole raft of bits and pieces. They need to have persistent desktop usage. They need to have a real, true desktop in the bank's environment or the customer's environment and then being able to connect into it. So there is a number of use cases where RDSH ain't going to cut it. But that doesn't mean that you should go right across the board with VDI, because it's not necessarily going to stack up on an ROI, okay, a return on investment. And if it's too expensive, then the whole project or the whole program or whatever it is you're trying to do, the deployment, is going to get called into question. If you use RDSH intelligently and start to use it as the core and then use VDI for the exceptions, and in fact we'd even go so far as to argue you should use VDI non-persistent or pooled as the first case, and only when it can't fit in that do you then take it to the next exception case to use a persistent or a static or a personal VDI. Does that pretty much cover
yeah.
that off?
Well, I should probably spend just another couple of minutes talking about persistent versus non-persistent, the VDI scenario. It's basically what happens when you log off. When you log back on to a VDI infrastructure, do you get the same virtual machine again, or do you just get one in a pool? And if you get one in a pool, then there's some very nice things we can do, like reprovision the virtual machines on logoff so that whatever the previous user did doesn't mess up the next user who comes along. Non-persistent or pooled VDI can be a heck of a lot less expensive, actually, is always less expensive than personal VDI, persistent. Because what you're doing with virtual desktops, right now, if you're running physical desktops, you've got a whole lot of desktops or laptops in your environment, which you basically don't care that much about them. As long as the users don't lose them, lose their corporate data, etc., you are not backing them up. You're not worrying about restoring them. When somebody's desktop dies, you simply replace it with another one. And if they've lost their iTunes or whatever, you don't care. If you map that into a virtual desktop environment, now we've got a huge problem, because if we've got a personal virtual machine, we have to manage that exactly the same way we manage a server, a new virtual server in your environment. We have to back it up. We have to restore it. We have to worry about DR, HA, and all that other stuff. And that costs a lot. Personal VDI, or non-persistent VDI, is one of the largest reasons that early VDI implementations have failed, because they just become too complicated, too costly.
It's effectively doubling the infrastructure you have to look after. That's a real danger. Okay.
So you need to really give thought to if you're going to come up with a cost-effective solution. The nice thing about non-persistent or pooled VDI is you can start doing things like using VHD differencing disks for the VMs. The storage impact is a heck of a lot smaller. You can do a lot smarter I.O. caching, because if you can cache all the I.O. to the parent image, then in fact you've hugely reduced the I.O. that's going to be hitting your infrastructure. You don't have to have stuff like bootstorms, etc. The minute you have persistent virtual machines that belong to a user, that are personal, you just open up a bucket load of problems for yourself. Now, having said that, there are technical issues in virtual desktop implementation, and there are political issues. If you've got the CEO's secretary who wants a particular environment all her own and she wants it to be absolutely constant, and that's not something you can do with profile management necessarily, then you give her a personal VDI instance. But if you're considering doing this for hundreds of users, or even dozens of users, or thousands of users, you've just opened a can of worms that you're going to regret within 6 to 9 months, because your management overhead will increase tremendously.
So I guess just to have a look at, we were talking before about bandwidth and latency and how it depends, because the value can change quite dramatically. This is also one of the reasons why this value will change quite dramatically. If you think about the screen being presented to the user, be it on a LAN or a WAN, it doesn't really matter. Okay. At the end of the day, you've got the session appearing in the data center, and then that session has to be presented, if you like, whether it be a thin client or a PC, to the user. Now, when this is actually happening, the protocol stack is smart enough that when the user doesn't actually do anything, let's say they get up and go to the toilet and then go and grab a new coffee or whatever, for that 5 minutes that person's away from their desk, effectively the bandwidth has fallen away to pretty much zero. You've just got keep alive, keeping the session. It's going to be less than 1K. So while it's less than 1K, it's not doing anything. That user comes back and they open up a Word document, it still hasn't consumed a lot. If they open up a PDF, maybe a bit more. When they start doing something busy, flicking through some screens and running through a spreadsheet, it starts to consume more. If they start pulling up a video, ooh, now we've got something interesting happening. And there's a lot of pixels moving around on the screen. At the end of the day, you can't beat physics, okay? If there's a lot of stuff, and it doesn't matter how it gets compressed, it still has to be sent down the other wire and then presented again, okay? The busier the screen, the more bandwidth used, okay? And the other one thing to make sure, pointing out, fidelity versus the actual, versus the bandwidth. Everyone wants a high fidelity usage or experience for the user, but they want low bandwidth. The two are contradictory, okay? Take a choice, okay? You can't necessarily have both. You can get very close in certain circumstances, but you're still always going to have a blend between the two, okay? Anything else to note on that, Rick?
I think there is. I mean, we've got an interesting convergence in protocols. We've got RDP and ICA on the one hand.
Don't forget we also have the other session.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll keep it short. Sorry.
It's all right.
Which are essentially very WAN-friendly protocols. They do stuff like local rendering on the client. With RDP, you've got font rendering and glyph rendering. ICA does that job somewhat better, quite a bit better, actually. And what we've started to see, on the other side of the coin, you've got PC over IP, SPICE, RGS, etc., which are essentially screen scraping technologies. but they're very good at delivering multimedia, whereas the WAN-friendly protocols are very poor at delivering multimedia. So now with Citrix, we've got stuff like HDX, etc., and RemoteFX, obviously, with the codecs. Right? So the capabilities of the two protocols are coming together. So it really depends, the protocol choice depends a heck of a lot on the type of content you want to deliver. And one of the nice things that's happening, both for PC over IP and particularly for RemoteFX, is they're making their screen scraping technology smarter and smarter with other codecs and that sort of thing. So that now what we're doing is we're starting to see convergence of the capabilities of the protocols and indeed the amount of bandwidth that they're using. The reason we've got PC over IP in here is, as many of you would probably know, Teradici have just recently announced they've actually got PC over IP for session host. So it's an interesting discussion. But the stuff that Dave says is quite relevant. If you want to deliver multimedia content on the WAN, you've really got to consider other ways of doing it besides using a remote display protocol.
Now, keeping on top of the time,
yep.
The next one.
Oh, printing. Oh, this is fun.
Okay.
Printing has always been a huge headache. I mean, in the WinFrame days with Citrix, you had your kernel mode printer drivers and blue screens and all that sort of stuff. Back with Windows 2000 Server, what happened was that the printer driver specification was changed, so you had a printer driver that ran in user mode. Nothing much really changed from 2000 until 2008. 2003 was just more of the same. With 2008, we had the introduction of a parallel printer subsystem based on XPS as a protocol, as a data transmission protocol. And Microsoft had an interesting vision for XPS, because if you had XPS-capable printers, then in fact you could print to a printer without using a printer driver. Really cool stuff. But if you go out right now and you actually ask all your printer manufacturers how many XPS-capable printers they've got, the answer is pretty discouraging. With 2012, Microsoft have up the ante a little bit more. So they still kind of support the older printer spooler subsystem, but with reduced functionality. A lot of the special stuff that you're doing with additional resource DLLs and the printer driver will disappear. Some of the stapling capabilities, some of the other stuff that people are used to using. However, they've got serious about XPS again. We've got Type 4 printer drivers, which will basically sit on top of the XPS to allow you that sort of customization. And I think we're finally getting to the stage over the hump where we may be getting away from the 1995-96 designed printer spooler subsystem that we've got. However, right now, if you're running Server 2008 or more particularly, Server 2003, printer drivers are a really, really big deal. They represent the worst possible software, without question, that you can put onto your terminal servers. Okay, now with 2008 R2, we've got stuff like session isolation from a printer viewpoint, which makes things a heck of a lot better. But if you don't think about printing when you're putting together a virtual desktop environment, you just created a great problem for yourself. Simple things like printing can actually chew up a hell of a lot of WAN bandwidth unless you've got some efficient way of handling that.
And that's just
that can really impact things.
That's just the connection at login time. Okay? So yep. It's an interesting point. I guess the other thing is this folds back into that same point about latency and bandwidth. Okay? In my past life, at one stage, I was working at Citibank with, I think it was 150 Citrix servers for branch, funding, inter-branch stuff. Anyway, there was some joker in Tokyo who decided to print a PowerPoint that was only probably 8 pages. But in those 8 pages, 2 of them had 24-bit color photographs. Hence, Tokyo disappeared off the face of the map for those 10-15 minutes until that print job finished. The same thing exists today. nothing's really changed to a fundamental effort. So when you start trying to print, the interesting thing is if you haven't resolved or at least tried to be smarter about your WAN printing or even your LAN printing, what typically happens is be the PDF or the PowerPoint that may only be 5 megs, so the user, it doesn't seem to be much. But when it has to be generated and turned into machine code that matches the printer driver at the far end, that 5 meg has now ballooned out to a couple of hundred. And so when you've got a couple of hundred meg trying to traverse down the wire, it's probably the same sort of graphic as an elephant trying to be, you know, pushed down a hose pipe. It's not going to work, okay? It's just basically going to, you know, the latency has just shot through the roof. Everyone basically disconnects. No one knows what's going on. So as I pointed out here, it's just one of the key things is to think intelligently about your printing. If you can at least centralize the printing on a print server, if nothing else, put it on a print server, get those network-attached printers going through some other mechanism other than the RDP virtual channels. Okay? If you can do that, at least you've got a half a hope to start, you know, keeping printing from disrupting the user's session. Okay?
As you're probably aware with... Oops, am I allowed to talk? Yeah, anyway. No, go on. With 2012, one of the other facilities that's been added is if you've got a network printer mapped to the local client, then in fact you can basically tick a box, and what will happen is your session host will print directly to the network printer. Now, that's still not efficient WAN printing, but what you can do is at least you can use quality of service on your WAN infrastructure to make sure that your remote desktops get reasonable performance and printing uses whatever bandwidth is left over.
Okay. So, as Rick pointed out earlier, again, no disrespect to anyone who's doing server virtualization, has done server virtualization, but this is also a key point just to bring up and reinforce again. Doing server virtualization, I'm not saying it's easy by any stretch. Look, I don't want to get involved in it. We have enough problems on our side of the fence, for God's sake. But don't take the same mindset for design, okay? There's no one sitting next to, even if you take whether it be a secretary or whatever in a business, if someone's sitting at ASB Bank just up the road and they're sitting on their PC, there's no one sitting there ready to magically jump up with another PC if that one craps out, okay? So there's no HA, there's no DR, I digress. But you get the concept, okay? If there's no high availability of it right now, what does it matter if their virtual desktop folds in and disappears, okay? If everything's been done reasonably well in the first place, you've got folder redirection, you've got autosave on a lot of the documents, etc. All they do is kill that session, come in and log into another one. It can be a non-persistent VDI. Once they log in, they call up their documents. Well, their documents still exist. They've still got the work. So it's not like they've lost half an hour's work, etc. Okay? So just think about how that works and adopt a desktop methodology for virtualization, not a server virtualization methodology.
No, that's probably pretty important. You buy redundancy in a virtual desktop environment by duplicating your virtual desktop hosts. That is, if you're running session host, you've got more than one. You know, always use an N plus one type terminology, design. And the same thing with VDI. Provided there is a virtual host, a VDI host available for you to log on to, or for a user to log on to whenever they want to, you've got 100% uptime. Even if half your server fleet's actually down at any one particular point.
So I guess really just sort of covering it off again in general, certainly with Server 2012, we've got another session starting after lunch. I believe it's 13:55 for the timing that they've got. We'll cover off Remote FX and Server 2012, as well as elements of VDI in a Windows 8 side of things. And I guess just a couple of key takeaways, purely from a selfish point of view, if we're allowed. Look, there is a free VDI assessment tool. Anyone who's going to get into this area, and to be honest, it's probably misnamed. It's not VDI assessment. It's probably a good idea to call it a desktop investigation tool. Okay? It's a great way of having a look in your environment, finding out what apps are being used, what sort of resources they need. If anyone's got challenges around Windows 7, trying to get across to Windows 7, certainly have a chat to us later about automating in bulk the apps from one to the other. And just a couple of key points on Quest View Workspace. And I guess probably that's about it, really, isn't it?
Okay. I'm going to stress that first point. Okay. What we did is we bought some code from Liquidware Labs. Some of you may have heard of a product called Stratosphere. And we've actually bundled that into an appliance, VMware, Hyper-V, etc. What that appliance does, you can put it on your site or a customer site, push out a 2.5 meg MSI, and it will tell you absolutely everything about that customer. Hardware configuration of the desktops, existing desktops of theirs. You can make decisions about repurposing desktops so they have to be replaced. More importantly, what applications are being used in the environment, not just which apps are being installed, the CPU, memory, disk I.O., storage increment, and the network I.O. increment, and graphics activity of that particular application. Everything you need to know to cover your butt up front, to identify what things are going to be hard and what things are going to be easy. It's a free download. You'd be silly not to use it.
Okay, so thank you very much for your attention, folks. I hope that's been useful. If anyone's got any specific questions, more than happy to take. I guess
we've got
do
time.
Do we have to wrap it up right now, or can we take questions? Or okay, anyone have any specific questions they want to call out, or no? Okay, more than happy to take any offline if anyone's here, or if anyone's got any specific scenarios they want to discuss. Thank you very much, folks. Pleasure.